Today, the massacre in the school in Pakistan. My guest is Deborah Scroggins, a reporter and author who has spent a ton of time in Pakistan, initially for the Atlanta Journal and Constitution, reporting on the Taliban, the rise of the Taliban and others. And then more recently on her book, one of her two books, the first book, Emma's War, the second book is Wanted Women, where one of the central characters, Afia Siddiqui, was regarded as the highest ranking Al-Qaeda woman. And Deborah spent a lot of time in Pakistan tracking her and her family down. So, Deborah, thanks for being on the program. I wanted to talk to you about the events in Pakistan, in Peshawar, Pakistan, the massacre in the schools.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's terrible, isn't it?
It's yet one more example of how we over here in the West will never understand, you know, a culture as radically different where people can think it is some kind of religious calling to go slaughter 130 children.
Yes, and unfortunately, this is becoming all too common in South Asia, you know. This is not the first case, of course, but it's probably the one that's hitting the hardest in Pakistan because this hit the children of the military and the elite, so it really hit home.
Well, talk about Pakistan has always played a double game where on one hand they've been the war on terror has played out there more than anywhere else. That's where the 9/11 plotters were, you know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Ramzi bin al-Shib, and so on were caught. It's where the drone strikes have been taking place. On one hand, the Pakistani military and intelligence service have been incredibly helpful. On the other hand, you know, they've also been the force behind the Taliban. They've played this double game because of their fear of India. Talk about the double game that Pakistan has mastered for decades.
Well, Pakistan has really been the incubator of this ideology, this jihadist ideology, you know, and much more so than Afghanistan, because Pakistan was, you know, created as a Muslim nation, and it's always been trying to use Islam as an ideology to bind itself together, because Pakistan is composed of numerous ethnic groups, different linguistic groups, and so the only thing that holds it together is Islam. So especially Pakistan's army has sought to promote Islamism as an ideology that can hold Pakistan together and distinguish it from India, which is their great rival, of course. And so this all really came to fruition in the 1980s during the jihad against the Soviet Union, when Pakistan pumped millions and millions of dollars into madrasas to teach students to go off and fight jihad in Afghanistan. And then later in the 1990s, when Pakistan supported the development of the Taliban, which were students, Islamic students who took over Afghanistan. So Pakistan's army in particular has a long history of supporting this ideology, but in the last decade or so, it has really turned on them with a vengeance, because these militants have started to say that Pakistan's army and Pakistan and Pakistani society is not Islamic enough, and they want to actually rule Pakistan. So this is the battle that the army finds itself in.
And yet the army has sort of tried to keep it, you know, have it both ways for a very long time, even though Pakistani society has been subject to Taliban attacks and even assassinations. You know, the assassination of Benazir Bhutto was, you know, led by someone affiliated with, you know, the Pakistani Taliban. And there have been terrible things that have happened. Yet at the same time, you know, they've used those people and they've maintained relationships with those people, you know, and have been involved with events in Kashmir, certainly, according to many people, linked to the horrific attack at the hotel in Mumbai. They've tried to head it both ways, hasn't that remained the case?
That is definitely the case. They've used these jihadist groups as proxies, especially in their battle with India. And you mentioned the attack on Mumbai, and the militant who is blamed for that attack on Mumbai was released on bail. So right, you know, directly following this, you know, absolutely horrific massacre in Peshawar, a Pakistani court goes on and releases a man who's alleged to be responsible for, you know, an equally horrific massacre in Mumbai, at the Taj Mahal.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yes, that just happened. So Pakistan, you know, as much as they would like to say they've changed their game, they really haven't, even today.
Wow. But it certainly seems from everything that I've read and observed and read from people whose opinions I respect on Pakistan, this seems to have this, you know, people are calling it Pakistan's 9/11. This seems to have to be different, that and the state seems to be reacting differently.
Well, as I said, the reason for that is because this hits the military right where it hurts, because it's their children. And, you know, there have been numerous massacres over the last decade. You know, there have been bombings that killed dozens of people. There have been bombings that killed Shiites. There have been bombings that killed Ahmadis, but they always were able to dismiss these attacks as, oh, well, this is a regrettable attack on a minority population. Now this is not a minority, this is them. And so they're taking it very seriously. But you still have to wait and see what's going to happen, because in every previous case, the unity that immediately follows one of these attacks is dissipated, and there's this sort of crowd that always apologizes for the jihadist, and they start to, you know, these same people were responsible, for example, for the assassination attempt against Malala Yousafzai.
Yeah, Malala Yousafzai is the young girl, 13 years old, who, or even younger, who was shot in the head by a Taliban because she was a sort of public figure, creating a lot of publicity around the issue of girls being able to read and to go to school, and she just won the Nobel Prize. And so you're saying they now regard her as a CIA plant?
Yes, she is widely regarded as a CIA plant in Pakistan. She is not, you know, not revered at all the way she is in the West. She is considered to be a Western stooge nowadays. And that is because on these very jingoistic radio stations and television stations, there are just this constant stream of invective against anyone who stands up against these Taliban sorts.
The
man who is accused of masterminding the assassination attempt against her is the same one who is accused of having masterminded this attack on the school. And his name is Maulana Fazlullah, or they call him Mullah Radio.
Mullah Radio. I should say my guest is Deborah Scroggins, author and reporter, talking about the attack at the school in Pakistan. You know, certainly your description of how Malala Yousafzai is seen in Pakistan must resonate very strongly for you, because you're one of the two characters that you focused on in Wanted Women, Afia Siddiqui, who, you know, is a, by any sort of normal standard, a horrific human being on multiple levels, is not exactly seen that way in Pakistan.
No, she is exactly regarded as the opposite of Malala Yousafzai. You know, when she was initially arrested in Afghanistan, there was some question about, you know, how she had arrived in Afghanistan. She had been wanted for a number of years as belonging to Al-Qaeda. But very quickly, this sort of, you know, peanut gallery of jihadist apologists got into action and came up with a whole story about how the U.S. had secretly held Afia Siddiqui and how she was a victim. And so now she is probably the biggest cause celeb in Pakistan. Freeing Afia Siddiqui is a cause that, you know, many nationalistic Pakistanis support, whereas they do not have any sympathy for Malala Yousafzai.
And who is Afia Siddiqui from a Western point of view?
Well, she is a mother and a scientist who was educated in the U.S. at MIT, has a PhD from Brandeis, and she became an Al-Qaeda sympathizer while she was a student here in the United States, and ended up going back to Pakistan and going on a mission for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed to help him get an operative into the United States.
And one of the grossest part of the trial was some of her anti-Semitic rantings. Describe those.
Well, she was tried because when she was captured in Pakistan, she fired on some American soldiers who had come to question her. She didn't hurt anybody, but she picked up one of their guns and fired them. So that was what her trial concerned. However, at her trial, she did break into several anti-Semitic rants where she said that Jews were responsible for everything that was happening to her.
Wasn't there something about not wanting Jews on the jury or...
That's true. She also said that. She said they were her enemies, so that they couldn't be objective about her case.
Yeah, this is a woman who got a PhD from Brandeis. Okay. Somewhat internal conflict here. So, you know, when you look at this situation, I mean, you know, you're saying, well, today everybody's unified, but let's see what happens. What is your gut telling you? Do you think that this really will change, will create change or not?
I'm sort of pessimistic because it's just been going on for such a long time, and there's such an undertow in Pakistan. It is so powerful and strong. For example, there's the politician Imran Khan, and you know, he was the famous cricketer and sportsman and very secular man. He was married to Jemima Khan, dated, you know, all sorts of movie stars, and he is now, you know, one of the biggest apologist for the Taliban. So it's just so widespread in Pakistan that it's hard to see how they can really turn it around, at least in any kind of short time.
Well, Deborah Scroggins, thanks as always. Let's stay tuned.
Okay. Thanks so much for having me, David.
Okay.
Okay. Bye.